Thanks very much, Barbara. Welcome, and I'm very sorry I missed the rest of the conference because everything I heard, people were uniformly enthusiastic, and I see many friends sitting at tables, and well, can't do everything. I'm going to start off by doing an introduction about synergies, tell you a little bit of the background, something about the initial plans we've put in place and where we're going. The first thing that I'll say is that it all began in a little Italian restaurant in Dublin, Ohio. A number of Canadians, there's a lot of Americans here anyway, OCLC hosted a digitization summit that was quite wonderful, but at that time very focused on what was happening in the United States. So several of us, the Canadians who were there, got together over dinner and much Italian wine and decided we needed a Canadian J store called C Store. Turned out that there were others who were on the publishing side in Canada who were very interested in pretty similar ideas. So SHRC, which is the Social Science and Humanities Research Council, basically got us together and told us we'd better cooperate because otherwise nothing was going to happen. That is, we weren't going to get any money. So we spent, I think it was a good 4 years before we got to the stage where we were officially funded to do the Synergies project. But meanwhile, a huge amount of very creative and exciting activities happened along the way, and I'll talk a little bit about them. The situation in Canada, I think it's changed a little bit, but still is that most scholarly social science and particularly humanities scholarly output is in print form. There has not been the kind of uptake among the publishers, particularly, or in some cases the scholars, as there has been around the sciences. One obvious reason, and probably the overriding reason, is that the costs of production and the income for many journals in these social sciences and humanities in Canada barely balance. And the revenues come largely from membership fees. So the idea of open access, which would in theory undermine the very small income that these journals receive, is a major factor in their thinking. So part of what Synergies is doing, and I will mention that one of the steering committee members is Rolly Lorimer, who is from SFU, but who's is the past president of CALJ, the Canadian Association of Learned Journals, is on the steering committee and has fostered relationships with that community as well as many of the rest of us. The problem, of course, is that we all know because of our background and of what we spend our days doing, is that that means that the output of Canadian research in those disciplines is becoming increasingly invisible to the rest of the world and beyond the individual subscribers. So SHRC, who funds the research largely, is very keen to move both in the direction of providing electronic access and also is very interested in the concept of open access, although they haven't moved quite as far along that way as CIHR and NIH have, for example. So they were very helpful in giving us funding to write a proposal. And about a year and a half ago, the group received funding from the Canada Foundation for Innovation, around $11 million towards the Synergies project. Regrettably, none of the money is for digitization. There is a need to find money for that. Also, none of the money is for research, so the researchers who are interested in this area are also being encouraged to apply to SHRC for money for their research. But the goals are to move the research to the internet. This is, you know, obvious from what I said before. Make the research visible and to legitimize it in some sense. We want to integrate work, the work of the partners, and I'll mention the partners now. The five major nodes, as they're called, are University of Montreal, which is the lead institution, and then starting on the East Coast, the University of New Brunswick, the University of Toronto, University of Calgary, and Simon Fraser University. Now, the organization is such that each of us has partners within our province or region. So, for example, University of British Columbia and University of Victoria are both part of the BC partnership. And in Ontario, there is quite a few of them. I know Guelph and York are, and Windsor, yeah. The other regions, I'm not as confident if I say their names, so maybe Mary and Raya can mention. So in each of the regions, we're doing a number of things. One is providing opportunities and encouraging individual journals to move online. Excuse me. And the other is to, beyond that, encourage researchers to engage in projects. And in BC, for example, I think we've got a very nice a collaboration between, Rick Kopak at University of British Columbia and Ray Siemens researchers who are working on reading tools and interface issues. From a pragmatic point of view, and that so that there's a little bit of funding for that part, and from a research point of view, and they are looking for funding elsewhere for that. I'll show you a diagram, the technical high level technical diagram that will show you how it's decentralized and national at the same time. And I mentioned it's CFI funded. So here's the high level architecture. And services, this took quite a little bit of work to balance off what the nodes thought should be their responsibilities and what the head or the center thought should be their responsibilities. And that is why this diagram is so complicated, and only I in this room can probably read it. But I will tell you that the green represents the center and the relationships, that is the interoperability between the center and the five nodes. The dark blue is the nodes and the services they provide, and then the content providers are in light blue. And pink represents some of the synergy services. So by and large, the production and dissemination happens at the nodes, not at the center. Long-term preservation is pretty much a joint thing, and the exchange, well, obviously you need two sides working on that. This is maybe a little bit easier to read, and this is where we actually have started doing some work, looking at where the responsibilities should lie. As I mentioned, it's been a pretty complicated sorting it out, and the left-hand X's represent the head, and the right-hand X's represent the regional, and you'll notice that there's X's in both boxes. And I'll just mention, when I get to talk a little bit about PKP, what that implies in particular in terms of PKP. So basically the idea is that the actual articles will continue to reside at the node, but the metadata, and including the abstract, will be transferred to the center, and there will be an integrated search engine and various tools at that level. So, I mean, in my mind, this is pretty similar to an aggregator situation, although most aggregators would actually take the content and massage them and dump them into less attractive and less readable formats, maybe. The statistics, it's very important for any of you who have had any involvement with CRKN will know this. CFI wants to know you've spent their money wisely. And of course, we all know that, but they measure that by statistics. So we'll need to be able to show that what we're doing is actually producing some good results in terms of access and use of the materials. Commercialization, what this refers to in the first instance is possibly striking a deal with CRKN, who does have a deal with the University of Montreal consortium called Erudy. And so looking at that possibility in order to fund ongoing activities. Federated browsing, both at the center and then each of the platforms, when I'll talk about that a little bit later, does have their own federated browsing tool or developing them. And there's significant interest in moving beyond journals and monographs to things like data, like any gathering of people who are brainstorming. You know, we immediately start talking about photographs, tapes, you know, everything. So we'll see where all of that goes. But the initial focus is on traditional journals and monographs. Again, just carrying on here, there will be a web interface searching, various kinds of searching. I'm trying to see if there's anything particularly striking, and the second to the last one, the georeference and graphical interface. There's quite a lot of interest, of course, in somehow bringing that together with the research content. What is clearly at the regional level is, as I mentioned, the things to do with publishing. And different organizations are handling that in different ways. For example, Simon Fraser University Library does the development for PKP, but we do not do any of the editorial functions like layout or editing or any of that. That remains in the hands of somebody else, although we will provide, for example, the Canadian Centre for Studies and Publishing will do that type of work. So this leads me into the public knowledge project. I'll just mention that in Canada there are two major what I would characterize as academic journal process management systems. One was developed through the public knowledge project called OJS, Open Journal Systems. And the other was developed through LUD at University of Montreal. And I think, Ray, are you going to talk a little bit about that? Yeah. So I won't say anything about that. Both of these are in use by different partners in the consortium. And I think it's fair to say that as time goes on, they are starting to assume some, maybe they don't look alike, but the functions are starting to assume some similarity. So the partners in the Public Knowledge Project, and I will say this is one of the most exciting projects I've ever been involved in from a number of points of view, and one of my great regrets is that my involvement is at an extremely high level. John Malinsky, a prof at UBC now, also at Stanford University, received funding from SHRC for the Public Knowledge Project with the idea being to improve scholarly communication, particularly in the developing world. And as part of that, his programmer developed some tools. There are three of them, OJS, which I've mentioned, the Open Journal System, OCS Open Conference System and the Metadata Harvester. And I think, Mark, you talked about the Harvester at the IR thing on Tuesday. Yeah. So these were three basically independent products. About 4 years ago, John's money for his programmer was running out, and he and Brian Owen and I and Roly Lorimer from the CCSP started talking about the need to provide some carry forward so that these useful products could continue to be developed. And out of that grew this wonderful partnership, which was reflected on this screen. So SFU Libraries' role is basically as the primary developer, although, of course, as you know, it's an open, well, maybe you don't, but it is an open source product, and therefore anybody can take it and within the limits of the license do what they want. Part of what we've done, I think, fairly effectively is to partner with a number of institutions who are taking on some of the development work, and what we've done is signed memoranda of understanding with the institutions. Oh, this is my job. I get to sign these. It's about my only role, really. That ensures that the work that they do is of an appropriate quality to be included into the actual software products, or if not, not necessarily to do, I hasten to add, with the quality of the programming. They may be modules. So that started about 4 years ago, we hired on contract some incredible people and have continued to. And I just want to say, one of the things that this is a true example of how people can work together in a mutually beneficial way. So Alex Schmecker, Mark is involved, James McGregor, who thankfully for us moved from the East Coast to the West Coast, Kevin Stranick, who's in Regina, and there are MJ Sahonis, who's in Toronto, and I don't think he's here. Dave Kisley's been involved, I think, to some extent. And they managed to keep moving forward in a very productive way, although the number of times they actually physically are in the same room is relatively infrequent. So they have meetings. So for those of you who care about how this stuff happens, they have phone meeting once a week, which helps, and aside from all of the online stuff that happens, to keep things moving. Okay, I think I've said most of this. I have neglected to mention anything beyond the top three products, which were the first three. MJ Sahonis developed a wonderful tool called Lemonade XML, which basically, at the moment, translates documents from one format to another. But I hear interesting things about how they're thinking of expanding that product to do a number of other things, including slicing bread, it sounds like, sometimes. The next I'll mention is a pretty significant partnership with the University of Athabasca, who has committed to do much of the development work to take the Open Journal System tool and expand it so that it can be used for monographs, which have a somewhat different workflow process. So that work that we've signed an MOU, that work is continuing. I think they've committed a half-time programmer for a year or something like that. The tools are all LAMP and under the new public license too. One of the things where there has been a lot of participation worldwide, and I will mention that there are known about 2,000 journals worldwide which are using OJS. When I say known, it's because we can only find them by doing Google searches, because It's open source software. It gets adopted by people, and we may not actually know they're doing it, using it. but one of the major contributions has been in terms of translation. So there's Croatian, there's Chinese, I believe. Ironically, one of the later ones to happen was French. Have I run out of time? Okay, I've practically run out of slides, too. There has been some major redevelopment from the initial tool that the programmer who was doing a proof of concept in the original project, that's been part of the focus more recently. Did I just go backwards? Sorry. Okay. And finally, I'll just give you the two URLs, the URL for pkp.sfu.ca. And I would like to put in a plug here. A year ago, we had the first PKP conference in Vancouver, and it was spectacularly successful. It was a wonderful conference. The second one is next July 8th to 10th in Vancouver. And I promise the air conditioning will be working at Harbor Center. I think the call for papers for that has either gone out or is going out very shortly. And one of the things that worked very well was it brought together librarians, publishers, computer people, and some researchers. So, and then the synergies, www.synergiescanada.org. So I'll stop there, and Mary's next.
Thanks, Lynn and Barb. Thanks for asking us to speak about synergies. Following on Lynn's introduction, I'll just expand a little bit on the Prairie Node. The Prairie Node consists of the University of Calgary and then the Universities of Saskatchewan, Athabasca, and Winnipeg are our partners. Development is centered in Calgary, but in fact we'll be working collaboratively throughout the project. So here's our working definition of digital preservation, not made up by us, but from one of the recent American Library Association definitions. They actually have three definitions of preservation, a short one, a medium-sized one, and quite a long one. This is the medium-sized definition, and that's what we're working from in a general way. Today I'm going to talk to you about three related facets of synergies. But right from the beginning, I want to acknowledge the work of Tim Au-Young at the University of Calgary, who's our technical architect, and the members of the various technical working groups. There are a number of groups all working together on these what I'm going to talk to you about. I'll also add that in line with some of Alan Bell's comments this morning, we've added a part-time project manager to our project, and we're calling her our personal trainer. So we're looking for really, really tight and well-defined code as we work our way through this project. All the services developed through Synergies will use existing tools where possible, and we hope to use open source as much as we can. The architecture and services will also be standards compliant. So our first project is persistent identification. And we will be developing, and in fact, we have a prototype architecture to support identification and viewing of materials. There's a whole lot of literature, as I was brushing up for this presentation, on this topic, but I can commend to you the recent report from Library and Archives Canada. While there's no acknowledged standard for persistent identification yet, in fact, they've defined three characteristics of persistence which apply to all of the schemes so far developed. So these are the characteristics that we'll be looking for as we move ahead in our persistent identification project. The Synergies architecture will have two production servers, completely redundant in different locations and in real time. This is not only for persistent identification, but this is also, when I come to the archival servers later, the model that we're using. In fact, the persistent identification server will be a high traffic server, so it's important that this, as opposed to the archival servers, is a really high-end server that will respond quickly to the kinds of calls that it will have. We're building web services now that will allow systems to request a persistent ID at a very early stage in the creation of the document. And we're evaluating a number of options. So just to tell you what all this alphabet soup means, PERL is the Persistent Uniform Resource Locator, and this is a standard developed by OCLC. The handle system that many of you are familiar with is a central registry that supports persistent location in DSpace, among other systems. DOI stands for Digital Object Identifier, and it's a standard which is currently being assessed by the International Standards Association. ARC is the Archival Resource Key, and it was developed by John Kuntz, and it's in use by the California Digital Library. So we're looking at a number of different options. In addition to that, we're looking at doing something quick and dirty so that we can test out some of the activity that happens around persistent identification. Because there are multiple schemes, a document can have multiple IDs. And this is a little bit confusing, but a document cannot have, or an ID cannot have multiple documents. So it's really important that the registry shows that each ID is completely unique and can be traced. And as I mentioned, right now we have a small prototype of our own persistent identification server working with our test OJS system. And as I go through some of this, I do have a diagram at the very end that I think will show how some of these pieces fit together. We'll move to article linking now, which is currently under investigation by the Article Linking Working Group. You may also know this by the term open URL resolving. University of Montreal is leading this aspect of the work and chairing the working group. And in fact, we want the broadest approach possible to linking from citations and a variety of formats. And Lynn mentioned not only journals, but also DSpace, institutional repositories, data repositories. So we're looking very broadly at article linking. They've defined a number of specifications. The must-haves include the ability to link from any type of document to its to the full text of all of its bibliographical references, and cited by linking, which allows to search for all indexed documents that cite a document through its identifier. And we will be using the Synergy's persistent identifier for items in OJS and ARUD and the other collections that we're involving in Synergy's. We also want the ability on a decentralized way to have regional nodes able to view and update the knowledge base. And we need simple text searching of the knowledge base using a citation. We'll be using a web services model, and we haven't had any discussion yet whether we'll use a proprietary tool, and you're all familiar with a number of open URL resolvers, I'm sure, so we're evaluating at this point. I'll move now to preservation. And it's important to know in Synergy's that we're making a distinction between two kinds of preservation, what we're calling persistent access, which would be something like the LOCKS model, lots of copies, keep stuff safe, the ability to archive in an archive that can be opened and provide access to material if it's not available from its original archive. And then the second and the more complex is using separate archival services, storing the public version, other versions, supplementary material, and preservation metadata archived for the long term. We aim in that second one to have a trusted and certifiable digital repository. So looking at the LOCKS process just for a minute, one of the nodes, Synergy's nodes, will be creating workflow and journals through the OJS or AirUD system, depending which one they're using. When that content is complete and identified, it will be bundled through an application to be sent to Locks. Locks includes a plugin manifest that will build to connect through OJS, and there's been work already done in this area, to collect and store the material in the network. That manifest will include policy information on acceptable formats and protocols, and Locks will be constantly polling the systems to ensure that the Locks servers in the network, and there will be at least seven, those Locks servers will be up to date and have the right version of the content that we're looking for. On the preservation side, again, the system, whether it's OJS, RUD, or whether it's DSpace, will bundle the preservation content. And the bundle will be modeled on the OAIS submission information package. Many of you know, but OAIS stands for the Open Archival Information System Reference Model. It's a high-level model that allows individual institutions to create appropriate workflows to preserve data. In addition, the content that comes from the servers will include metadata, some of which will be automatically extracted, and that metadata will be modeled on the premise standard. Premise is a set of core metadata elements identified for digital preservation. There are five major areas: provenance, authenticity, preservation activity, technical environment, and rights management. The archival server will use a number of ingest tools to get this data from the various distributed servers and intake them. When the bundles are received at the archival server, they'll be audited for preservation risk, unsupported formats, for example, or something, data that's improperly encoded. This information is really important because when it goes into the archival server, we want to ensure that all of that data is in a format that later can be audited and migrated. Some files may be immediately converted based on agreed-upon policies with the members, and incorrect files will be flagged and recorded. We'll also be doing format monitoring as we go along, and this is the area where the most development in Synergies is going to occur. There are a number of trusted repositories under development now, and we'll be consulting closely with members of those trusted repositories to make sure that we're consistent with what's going on in the standards community and that we're providing a product that will be consistent with other areas. Communication will be a really important part, not only communication, human communication, but also computer communication, to ensure that there's good feedback and when a format is migrated, that when it goes back into the Locks servers, that again, it's up to date and that data is available. So this diagram kind of gives you a sense of what we're doing. At a node, in the yellow area, you'll find that work will happen to create the content. Some of the content will be born digital. Some of it will have been digitized in a variety of ways. Once that content is now created, it will then send, using the manifest information, through to the Locks network. And it will also send information through to the archival servers, the purple and the blue. At the time that data is created, persistent ID servers will link through to assign the persistent ID, and an article linking process with a knowledge base will continue to be updated. So this is kind of a small piece of the diagram that Lynn showed you, giving you an example of how the nodes and the central part of Synergies will work in the area of preservation. One of the things we aim to do is create a working prototype of preservation, persistent identification, and linking. That prototype will turn into a trusted digital repository and something which we hope to use not only for Synergies but for many of our other digital collections. In addition, we'll have a business plan through Synergies of how we can sustain and enhance this national architecture. So Lynn showed you the URL for Synergies, and that gives you a sense of what we're doing in the area of preservation. We're really gearing up now, and the working groups have been doing an awful lot of work, so we're looking for some good small tests and prototypes that we can do so we can start to build the bigger network. Thank you.
I'll thank you also for staying on a Saturday. My name is Rhea DeVacos, and I work for the University of Toronto. And like the slide says, I'm going to give you a brief update on what Ontario, Érudit, and the Atlantic Node are doing. And I realized as I was sitting there, I do have more slides about Ontario because I do know it best. It's not because I think it's the center of the universe, so just bear with me. A little defensiveness there. So I'm going to start by talking about the Ontario Synergies node. So as Lynn said, divided into regional nodes, because that's what you have to do in order to get a federal grant. And each node is doing some of the things similar and some of the things differently. In Ontario, this is a very common bundle of both platforms and services across the country running the Open Journal system, the Open Conference system, and DSpace as a repository. There are other systems, but I think those are the predominant. What is different about what Ontario is doing is that we will be integrating Synergy's content into Scholars Portal. So I'm actually going to skip over to Scholars Portal for a minute. Many of you know what Scholars Portal is. It is a project of the Ontario Council of University Libraries that has about 100 million abstracting and indexing citations and about 13 million full-text journal articles. This is a prototype of the new interface. And I think what's really interesting here is that our smaller Canadian journals will be represented in a traditional ANI database that they will hopefully have the same, not the same voice, I should say, but a voice along the Harvard Business Review and the Elseviers of the world. So we're quite excited about that. It's quite challenging on a number of fronts. So this is a prototype. It's called Scholars Portal 2. And this is one development box. I wanted to show you that we actually do have some Synergies content, and of course, I wanted to show you, but you can't read this slide. But trust me, this is a Synergies journal. It was born on the Open Journal system, and we have managed to integrate it. So we're quite excited about this. In Ontario, we host somewhere between 30 and 40 live journals right now, and we're working with another 15. There's about, I don't know how many possibly Synergies journals there are across the country, but we are looking for content across the country, and not only journal content, but once we've done sort of a pilot, we'll start with journals, and then we'll look at conference material and then also repository material, and you can see that those are getting increasingly complex. Just another screen you can't read, I guess, and this is actually just one more view. Actually, I'm going to go back. Excuse me, I should have wanted to talk to you a little bit about MarkLogic, which is what the new Scholars Portal will be built on. We're quite excited because it's going to enable us to do a richer search by focusing on XML. So our users will be able to, for example, search on data sets or tables. And it has a new interface with many of the common search features that we heard about in this conference, and we are using as our standard the NIH DTD. And actually, this is a challenge. Getting our smaller journals to the NIH DTT is a key challenge. To any standard is actually a key challenge. And those of you who are Ocalites, or those of you who have done some, the first speaker today, or one of the first speakers, talked about becoming relevant again. And it's a huge accomplishment for Ocal that we can now mistype something and it can actually suggest the proper spelling. So I wanted to show you that because that's hard earned. Some of the challenges and opportunities. In order take full advantage of Scholar's Portal, our journals really would benefit from XML markup. And you can imagine we have some journals that are just moving from print to an electronic process. So getting them to that stage is a huge challenge. Managing access based on subscription-based journals or on partial open access will be a challenge. And then, of course, moving beyond journal content. The other thing that I wanted to mention is that the Ontario Council of University Libraries is in the initial investigative stage of looking at what it means to be a trusted digital repository. So we'll be working with them in addition to the Synergies Group to leverage that. So I'm going to move on to EduD now. And EduD got a new interface, a new version, in April of last year. EduD is a consortium of the Universities de Montréal, Laval, and Quebec at Montreal. They host approximately 52 journals, I believe, in both English and French, and it's delayed open access, and they have international contracts and a number of partnerships, both here in Canada and internationally. The news from EduD is that they have recently signed a contract for their content with CKRN. They're also acting as the vendor for 11 University of New Brunswick hosted journals, and you'll see that content integrated into their dissemination platform. This fall, they're planning a complete rewriting of their production platform. Last year, they worked on the dissemination, and they'll be using a part of OJS for their workflow. When I spoke to them, I guess last week, they hadn't quite sorted out what they're going with. They'll also be working on a new conference proceedings publishing platform, and that will be integrated into their current production platform. After that, they're looking at data. So quite a lot of development work in addition to being responsible for the national portal, which Lynn touched on. Is anyone here from the Atlantic node? Oh, great. Okay. Because they just had a meeting September 24th, and these are some of the things that they sorted out. First of all, I wanted to say that each of the nodes is slightly different, and I thought this was an interesting governance model where they've got a technical committee, a journal advisory committee, and a separate board of directors. So they're looking at how to facilitate regional cooperation, agreement on technical approaches, developing a sustainable business model. They've just completed a content inventory of a variety of types of content, including digitized collections, and they're looking at how to assemble or link that into a critical mass. And they're looking at how to create a regional web presence. One of the things that the Atlantic node was funded for was some research around the Google search appliance, and they're looking at that use for a regional web presence. The data model that they are currently considering is EduD. Right now, it's the University of New Brunswick that is the only production installation of the Open Journal System, and they offer a variety of services, one just based on plain OJS, one OJS married with EduD for dissemination. So the Atlantic node right now is assessing whether to use the EduD DTD as their standard. They're also assessing whether they should be looking at a central installation or local installations. In Atlantic Canada, they use a variety of IR platforms, so they're looking at building best practices. And last but not least, they just, I guess you can't see it very well, but the logo on top of there is the Fall Institute in Digital Libraries and Humanities, which was, I don't know how many people went, but that was just completed, and that was a collaboration between UNB and Acadia, and that has sort of, they've moved it, remember the Summer Institute, it's now moved to the fall, and I promised I would give a plug for the 2009 one also. And that's the end. So thank you again for listening.
Has anybody got a question for one of the panelists? Yes, in the back.
I was just wondering how you joined the Lox Alliance, or if you joined the Lox Alliance. Did you join it as
The question was, how did they join the Locks Alliance? Mary, do you want
to? Yeah, okay. We actually haven't joined the Locks Alliance as yet. We're using the Locks software. We're participating. There's overlap in the Prairie Node with the COPL initiative, and COPL has joined the Locks Alliance, and so we're working closely with them, but we don't have a membership right now in the Locks Alliance.
Any other questions? The question was whether Synergies has thought about how to extend the work they're doing with preservation to go back to CFI and propose that as an extension for other disciplines.
Is this on? Yeah, I think it is. That's a good idea, and in fact, statistics are not the only thing, but we have, not specifically with CFI, but more with SHRC and FedCan, used to be called the Learneds. That's how I always think of it. In any case, been doing some work with them. That's been more with the PKPP people doing the work. I think one of the things you'll have gathered from this, Chris, is in many ways there's very complex relationships, but very healthy relationships, and among quite a variety of different projects that are going on. But that's a good idea.
Any further questions? Okay, well, thank you very much for a very interesting update.